This conference is being recorded.
So we've just started the recording process, just to let you guys know. So that being the case, I'm just going to give an official welcome to the Heart Start to Your Week call. And Darshan, I think you were about to say something, so I don't want to interrupt you. But just to say, for all of our listeners, including those that are listening to this recorded, we just really welcome you into this, what has come to be named an oasis of positivity.
Yeah.
A brief moment in time where you could reside in the endless stream of time of the synchronicity of the heart. And so, Darshan, I was interrupting you there. Was there something you were sharing?
No, I just observed that, you know, in seeing some of the reviews and things, I just saw so many women involved and being supported and interacting and being supportive of your work and things like this, and not as many men. And so I was happy to be supportive here in any way that I can. And,
yes, we like having the testosterone component present.
I can understand.
It adds balance.
That's right. Well, and you know, gender is something that neutralizes itself in the heart. We all have masculine qualities, and we all have feminine qualities, and the heart is this wonderful balance of the two. You know, it knows how to expand and it knows how to contract. It is the intelligence of the union of all polarities. So I really welcome each of you to the call. I don't know, did anyone else join us while I was absent doing the technical stuff? If so, I invite you to introduce yourself now if you'd like to. Sounds like no. Were there any angel chimes that chimed in while I was gone?
I don't think so, Shava.
Okay, thank you. So, as always, I like to begin these calls just by focusing our attention in the area around the heart. There's so many things that take our attention during the day, and our attention is such a valuable thing, such a precious commodity. It's not even something we sell, and yet we say that we do. We spend our time, right? But what is our time really? Our time is what we give our attention to. And so I take it to heart that you're bringing your attention to this call and this time. And so I invite you to give attention to, as a gift to yourself, your own heart. And with that, to give attention to something or someone that you're grateful for. And to just be together in appreciation for a moment. Research from the Institute of Heart Math shows us that when we feel appreciation, it impacts us on many levels. It changes our heart rhythms, and as our heart rhythms change, it changes our brain function, and it changes our way of perceiving life or what's right in front of us, as well as our way of responding to it. Appreciation changes the way our immune system works, the way that our autonomic nervous system works, and that governs 97% or 95% of all of the rest of the functioning of our body. So when we talk about our health, or when we talk about our brilliance, or our ability to think clearly, or ability to solve problems, Or I might say, get out of conundrums and jams. Appreciation is the greatest power I know. To access the intelligence of the heart and its ability to meet challenge with innovation. And I don't think anybody could be present on this call without some challenge in your life or the awareness of challenges that are existing in our world. And so today's call is in some ways a talk story time. They call it talk story in Hawaii. About some very specific challenges that I found myself in, some real problems for me that I couldn't solve, but the heart did. And so maybe you could just take a moment to bring into your awareness, and perhaps someone like you, Darshan, you might not perceive any jams or challenges in the world. In the very depth of the heart, there is, I think, the ability to see everything as perfect, but I'm sure as heck not there. And so maybe each of you could just take a moment to see, what are you perceiving right now as a problem? Is there anything that you perceive right now as a problem in your own life or in the world? And just notice, I don't know if anybody noticed the temperature change on the call, just us focusing our attention, now paying attention, right, spending our time and attention on this thing. But I felt myself get colder. Did anybody else notice any changes?
I definitely felt myself get colder also.
I noticed... this is Suzanne. A little bit of just tension. Focusing on the problem.
Yeah.
You know, like a slight tensing up.
Well, from a heart math perspective, as many of you know, what we teach here at Fiera is a system of tools developed by heart math that allow us to access the power of the heart to reduce tension and stress and be able to meet challenges with the intelligence of the heart. And so I'm present right now to the fact that from a heart math perspective, the problem is probably less the problem than our tension and coldness in reaction to it. Mm. And it's so interesting just to even see that as we carry our attention in these places. So just for fun in this call, I would say let this problem be sort of like a gem, like one of those Chinese balls. Have you guys seen those Chinese balls that they roll in their hands?
Mm-hmm.
They just roll them in their hands, and the Chinese ball doesn't get any smoother, but what happens is by rolling the Chinese ball in your hand, it articulates all the joints in your hand and gets your hand very fluid and strong at the same time, very supple. And so it prevents arthritis and degeneration of the joints. And so maybe we could let these quotation marks problems during this call, as you hear some stories, just roll in your hand, so to speak, metaphorically, with the possibility that these problems are these hard balls that are not designed to be fixed, but that are articulating our joints, that are bringing more of who we can be into life. That's what I found in these two very particular circumstances where I, that some of you have seen on the email that brought you to the call tonight. When I was in Nicaragua in December, delivering 350 backpacks filled with school supplies and medicine and toys, Christmas toys for the kids down there, and doing some other activities as well. And when you're working on a massive scale, to do something like end poverty or end shame of poverty. Mm. You meet a lot of hardballs along the way. Life can throw you some hardballs. And chances to articulate those joints, the heart. So there were two things in particular that I wanted to share with you guys tonight. One, obviously, was when I was delivering meals, and I had 40 meals, which I'll tell you more about as we go, and yet 100 and some, maybe 150 children showed up to receive them. So it's like, how do you decide who gets to eat and who doesn't? Now, that's a microcosm of what's going on in our world as a whole, isn't it? 30,000 children a day die of starvation in a world that has enough food actually to feed everyone. It's just not distributed. These are sobering things, right? They're hard balls. And when I was a teenager, those hard balls of life, those global, what I would call problems, right, caused me to react so strongly with tension in my body and in my mind that I made myself violently ill so that I couldn't eat. And a dear friend pointed out to me, well, is the fact that you can't eat saving the 30,000 children who aren't eating either? And of course it wasn't, right?
Yeah.
It was only in finding the heart and the heart's response to these things that allowed me not only to find peace with what was going on, but to re-enter those front lines of global issues in the ghettos of the second poorest country in the Western Hemisphere and confront the quote-unquote problem head-on or heart-on, as the case may be, in how do you meet starving children and decide who eats and who doesn't. At 18 years old, when I lived in Nicaragua the first time, that situation would have thrown me into such an emotional crisis. And this time, the resolution of it was so elegant through the simple power of the heart. And so I'll share that story and how that unfolded. And then similarly, in being confronted with a remarkable deaf, dumb child who was begging on the street, and I had nothing to give him tangibly. And the exchange that we had, again, in the past, without the power of the heart, I would have walked away from that scenario feeling like I had failed him and let him down and tortured myself over my inability to affect change where I saw a problem. And instead, as the story will unveil itself, what you guys will get to hear is I walked away from this diamond of an interaction with this child having received his teaching.
Mm. Thank you.
And so, again, the problems are not the problems. The problems are our reactions to them. So I'm going to start, actually, with this young deaf, dumb child. And so interesting, because the more that I have learned how to use the tools from HeartMath, and I haven't forgotten you, by the way, in that we will address your question at the end of story time. Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
Okay.
Shiva, I've
yes.
got to go. I love you.
And I love you too, Darshan. Thank you for joining us for this brief moment. And you can always listen in later on the callback number.
Oh, great. Thank you.
And, yeah.
All love to you and everyone. Take care.
You as well, Darshan.
Thank you.
Angel tone. There it is. So, is this interesting to everyone on the call? Shall I continue in this vein?
It's
stories.
Yes. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
So, I know some of you are mothers on the call, and I know sometimes your child has a need that you can't meet, right? or they don't even know how to express their need. And it's like it grabs your heart. It's just like, what do we do? How do we respond? And so very interesting is that, as I was saying before Darshan had to say goodbye, the more I use the heart math tools, the stronger my intuitive clarity becomes. And it's not really a psychic ability. It's not like that at all. It's simply an awareness of what's needed and the ability to respond with that. So intuition is less about knowing where the right parking place is, although that's always, you know, convenient. Mm-hmm. But it's more about knowing, does this person need a firm response right now? Do they need a kick in the butt? Or does this person just need to be energetically, like, held in a gentle embrace for their benefit, their growth, their next step? But intuition can move in all kinds of ways, and one of the remarkable things about my trip to Nicaragua was that my intuition told me ahead of my trip that my ticket to Nicaragua wasn't going to work. And so I've done international air travel for years and years and years for my work and never checked a flight a week in advance. But my intuition told me to do it. And so I did, and I was right. The airline to say, as I reeled off my record locator, oh, yeah, everything's fine, have a nice flight. They said, oh, this trip was canceled the day that it was booked, which had been 3 months earlier. And we also have no flights, no seats available on this flight or any other until after the holidays. So what ended up happening is I ended up in Nicaragua 3 days ahead of schedule. If any of you have done a big project like this, if you could imagine losing 3 days off the front of it, it was very time-crunching to try to get everything done and out the door 3 days ahead of schedule. However, it was really turned out to be quite a synchronicity and a gift because the 30 cargo boxes filled with backpacks were in customs. Customs closed the day before my original flight was due to land in Nicaragua, and customs didn't want to let the boxes out. So if you can imagine 30 huge, you know, wardrobe-sized moving boxes filled with supplies for children sitting inside of customs. So there I am, 3 days ahead of schedule, while customs is still open before they close for the holidays. And so what am I doing with my time? I'm sitting in customs trying to get my boxes out, right? Eventually got to the point where I was sitting on my boxes in customs, refusing to leave until they rolled me out with them. And I have some wonderful photographs that maybe some of you have seen of the tenacity of the will of the heart. And it was really the will of the heart. It was not insistence. It was clear seeing that, for example, the woman at customs said to me, and there's a reason I'm sharing all of this with you guys, the woman at customs said to me, well, if it was one box, we might be able to give it to you and sneak it out, but it's 30 boxes. How can we just let 30 boxes out? Their bureaucracy couldn't imagine it not taking a lot of linear time, because it was so big. And I said to her, and you could just take a moment and look at your own life and see, where are you creating obstacles in linear time to receiving or accomplishing what you want to receive or accomplish just because it's the way you tell yourself it's a big deal? All of that is mental gibberish that happens in the mind, but when you add the power of the heart, it cuts through all of that. And things happen that seem miraculous, but that are just simply natural. So I could feel, as I was sitting with this customs official, I could feel her consciousness, I might say, and I I felt so much compassion because I could feel in myself a match for it, a place where I limit what's possible because I make it too big a deal in my mind, and also a place where I don't want to receive because it's too much. And so I said this to her. I said, well, this doesn't make sense. This is the message, then, that you're communicating to our donors and the people in the United States that want to help you. You're saying, if you give us just a little, we'll receive it. But if you give us too much, we can't handle it.
Wow.
And I had to look at myself and see, I do that all the time. Oh, no, no, no. No, thank you. I don't want, no, I couldn't have a second serving. No, I can carry my bags myself. Please, I don't want to put you out. Right?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
We diminish our receiving all the time, and yet here I was upset because they were diminishing their receiving. It didn't make sense. And so instead we found compassion and humor just as we did right now in this situation.
Huh.
And she became a tremendous ally for me, and she said, you're right. We need to get these boxes to the children. And so there I am, sitting on the boxes, and all the men who are, you know, moving boxes around in customs start to find out that, you know, these boxes are filled with stuff for street kids. And they are enrolled then as well, right? We've got to get these boxes to the children. And so she's running around now trying to enroll her boss in the idea. And during that time, there's this little beggar child. And I say that because it really captures his essence. Super thin, small for his age, barefoot, clothes that are too small and that are worn out. And if you could imagine a stick thin body, for the clothes to be too small, he'd have to have had them for many years.
Wow.
And his face was slightly distorted as if there was some sort of birth anomaly. And he kept tapping on the window of customs to get my attention. And it's a strange thing with the children in Nicaragua. I don't know what it is, but it's like I step off the airplane and they can smell me there. They know, I don't know if it's just because when they tap on the window to get my attention, I actually give them my attention. There's that theme again, right? Whereas they're so used to being shunned or dismissed, but for whatever reason, I'm in love with these children. And so I look at them directly in the eye and I see who they are. And I engage them and they engage that because they love that and it's so rare for them. And so he's rapping on the window, and I'm waving at him and trying to say I can't come over there because I have to sit on these boxes like a hen on her eggs. And finally, we get permission to get the boxes out, and they actually roll me out sitting on the boxes, and we captured the whole thing on video for our documentary, which is quite hilarious and quite a victory, really. I mean, a victory of synchronicity and intuition and tenacity and heart and care and love. And so now the boxes are out and we're late for our appointment with the political dignitaries because we didn't expect to be in customs all day trying to deal with this. And so now we're trying to get these 30 huge boxes into some kind of truck to transport them where they need to go for the delivery to the children. And the little boy that's been rapping on the window has gathered a crowd around him of about 20 street kids. And they see me rolled out on the boxes, and I'm elated, right? So what's the first thing I want to do? I want to start giving out backpacks, right? Not a good idea. So I pull out a backpack, and I hand it to the first little girl that's in front of me, and pretty soon the 20 kids are jumping on me, all wanting one. And apparently it's illegal outside of customs to give the kids things. So an official comes by, puts a stop to it, and the director of the documentary says, Sheva, you can't do that here. We've got to get these boxes out of here. You know, we'll just you'll end up giving them all away to these kids, and we won't have any for the kids in the program. So recognizing that I was a little sentimental and caught up in the drama of it in that moment, and that they have reason, now here I am in this position surrounded by 20 street kids who are tugging at me. They know what's in the boxes is for kids. And now I have to say, no, I can't give you anything.
Mm.
That's a jam, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, meanwhile, there's also these huge cranes coming by, carrying boxes and delivering boxes from one place to another and into one truck and out of a truck and into the loading dock. And it's not exactly a safe place for a bunch of little kids wandering around barefoot. So I motion them all to come away from where all that activity is, and they gather around me in a circle. And I have never had such an attentive heart math class, except maybe you guys right now. I looked at them and I said, you want what's in these boxes? And they all said, yes, yes, yes. And I said, I'm in this terrible position where I can't give that to you. But I said, I had to go to my own heart and use my heart math tools on the spot. How am I going to deal with this situation? And so here's how my heart responded. My heart responded by saying, I can't give you what's in those boxes, but what's in those boxes is destined for kids. So I said, I can give you something better than what's in those boxes. And I can tell you, on that loud third world bureaucratic crazy street, you could hear a pin drop around those kids. No one had ever taken the time to have this conversation with them. I said, I can't give you what's in those boxes, but I can teach you how to receive and how to attract even more than that. So here's what I want you to do. And then I talk them through a heart math tool. And you should have seen their earnest little hands on their hearts and their little furrowed brows intently breathing in their heart and focusing their attention. I said, I want you guys to send love into those boxes to the children that will be receiving what's there. Because the surest way to receive is to give. Mm. And in giving your love, I guarantee you, you are creating a superhighway. You're paving a road for that and much more to come back to you. We don't have to know how. It will happen. They were thrilled. They intently, for 20 minutes, sat there sending love into those boxes with me, all except for one of them, the little boy who'd been rapping on the window initially. And he was in a panic as he watched all of his other friends calm down and come into peace. He couldn't understand, and he was sobbing and grabbing my shirt and pointing at his bare feet and pointing at his hungry mouth. Aww. And looking panicked at his friends, like he didn't understand what was going on and why he wasn't getting what he needed. And so the little girl that I'd given the first backpack to whispered in my ear, he's dumb and deaf. He doesn't know what you're telling us. Oh, talk about another jam, right? So it worked, but now what am I going to do? So I used my heart math tools again. And I was really, really going for it in that moment because I was so overwhelmed with compassion for this child. And his desperation became my desperation. And I literally had nothing on me except my own clothes. I had nothing to give him. And so I went to my heart using my tools. And here's what happened between us spontaneously. I signed to him. I turned around and signed to him that I didn't have anything to give him. And as soon as I started signing, he stopped crying because finally someone was paying attention to him. You see, this is what we all really want. It's the highest valued payment we can give someone is our attention. So I signed to him that I had nothing to give him, and his eyes fell a little bit. But then I pointed with my finger at his heart, and somehow with my hands I communicated that in there was everything. It seems like such a simple thing, and yet in that moment his face, to my total surprise, broke out in a huge grin, as if I had just announced that he'd won the lottery. And he started laughing, and he followed me everywhere I went. And as we drove away, he brought his hands together in a prayer position at my window at the car, thanking me as if I had given him a 10-course meal. I was crying as we left because he reminded me of who we really are. And so the same thing happened when I was in this situation in the ghetto. What had actually happened is I was doing a heart math workshop for the Ministry of Family and Education in the Nicaraguan government. And it was a wonderful experience, so wonderful, because people there have so little, and to receive the smallest amount yields so much payment in gratitude that it's deeply fulfilling to do anything there. And at the same time, it's a third world bureaucracy and it's government, right? So, you know, we were expecting 100 and some people, and maybe 60 of them showed up. So we had these 40 extra meals from the lunch, and they were about to throw them out. I was like, oh, my God, you can't throw out this food. We work in the ghettos here. There are starving children. We need to, you know. And so in spite of the fact that I myself had been teaching all day long with dysentery, which is a whole other story. Maybe that'll be the topic for another call.
Oh, my gosh.
I said, no, no, we need to load up the van with this food, and we're going to go into the ghetto before it gets too dark and it's unsafe for me to be there, and we're going to deliver these meals. Well, we got there, and it was dark already. And so what I did was I went to the little shanty town where there were a couple kids that I knew from. They were in the documentary that we were filming. And I grabbed them, and I said, hey, you guys, we have some food. Why don't you get a couple of your friends and come? We're going to park out by the cathedral, so outside of the ghetto where it's safe, where it's lit, and we'll give you guys the food and you can bring it back. Well, then, so I walked with the kids and my poor mother, who this is her first trip to the third world, right? She's in her 60s. She's sitting in the van with the film crew and then regional director of my program's down there, and I'm hopping out of the car, and I'm like, it's not safe for you guys to be here, but I'll meet you guys where it is safe. Because the truth of the matter is, safety doesn't really come from physical circumstance. Safety comes from where we come from in our heart. And I knew that in that situation, and I knew that I was okay. So I went and got the kids in the ghetto. We walked out to meet, you know, the car in the lit area. And as soon as we opened the trunk of the car, I don't even know how this happened, but there were at least 150 kids and young mothers with children all around us, as well as 10 to 15 teenage boys who had switchblades.
Oh.
And I thought, great, now this is another jam, right? Especially the boys with switchblades who were, you know, that was what we'd been trying to avoid, actually, by parking the car in the light. And so they're all clamoring to me and to the director of the film who was unloading the meals from the trunk of the car or the van to be the ones that get the food. And it's very interesting because my mom is sitting in the back seat of the car, and she said to me later, you know, I said, were you scared in that situation? And she said, I didn't have the heart to be scared. She said, I was so touched by the poignance that this is not like Nintendo these kids are fighting over. It's beans and rice and potatoes. And so there I was, how do you decide who eats? So same thing. I started using my heart math tools, and what spontaneously arose in that situation was my voice carried above the crowd, and I asked them all to become quiet, which they did, which surprised me. My heart always surprises me. It's such a fun co-creative adventure when you know how to play life with the power of your heart, because it surprises me all the time. And so the whole crowd got quiet, and I looked at them all and I said, what would you do if you were me in this situation? I said, I wish I had enough food to feed you all. Believe me, I do. And I don't have that. So I don't know what to do. What would you do? And a couple of them said, well, feed the youngest ones first. And then their argument started, right? And so I went to my heart again, and my heart was very simple. It just said to them, these meals were intended for some young boys that have been helping us make a film. They've been working. This is their payment. I hope you can understand that. And it was astonishing, but everyone respected that. And the boys with the switchblades backed away. And the kids who had been working with us on the film lined up. And they got their meals, but what they did with their meals was they started sharing them with everyone. I feel like these stories are so powerful, or that the experience of watching the heart in motion in these situations is so powerful, because these are microcosms of our global issues, aren't they?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Miscommunication at an international level, or lack of equal distribution of nourishment at an international level. And how do we handle this? It's too big for any one of us to confront it and change it at a global level, because who even knows how to? Who would we pick up the phone and call? And yet when you see the heart able to respond to the microcosm version of these larger global problems, and to be able to respond in a way that resolves the situation, in a way that brings heaven on earth to the situation, it gives me personally a tremendous amount of hope for what's possible at a global level. And so you could see that what these apparent jammers or problems, quote unquote, were, these hard balls that got thrown my way, when I took them in the hand of my heart and rolled them around, metaphorically speaking, of course, now we're talking about using heart math tools practically to do that, which some of you know, some of you are interested in learning more about. What it did was articulate the joints of my spirit. It brought more of the value that I can be to our world forward, so that the so-called problems were not problems at all. The problem had been my reaction to the situations. And when I engaged the power of my heart to respond instead, those hard ball problems became opportunities. And so maybe you could just take a moment for yourself right now, in light of those stories, to see how might it be, just as a possibility even, that whatever problem you tensed up and got cold around at the beginning of this call might actually be an opportunity. How is this problem, quote unquote, presenting itself as a place where you could bring more of your value into the world? And that having been said, I would love to open up the call for your input, your questions, your stories, anything that you want to say. And we'll also address the question that you sent Annette during the week. But does anybody want to share anything right now? They're speechless, Gingy. Gingy is my cat, and he absolutely, as soon as we're talking about the heart, he will come from wherever his adventures outside have taken him, and he parks himself right at my feet.
This is Bacheva. I think just to have the awareness that the heart can open, like at that moment where you use the word jam, where you're in a jam or where there's a problem, just to have an awareness that there's a possibility of the heart opening. Like this is like the possibility of something miraculous happening, that the heart can open. I mean, when it seems natural to close it. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because often when there seems to be a quote-unquote problem, it seems natural to withdraw or to close your heart. But to see, to actually like change, to reframe it, and to see that this is a place where the heart can actually open. Oh my goodness, what can happen if the heart opens? It's such a different picture.
Well, and that's exactly right, because that natural reaction to withdraw and close is our survival intelligence. Because that's what protected our lives when we were living on the prairies running from tigers or whatever. I don't know if tigers lived on the prairies. Bears, maybe. But our modern situations, our modern problems, like how do we communicate? How do we distribute food evenly? While they may seem to have to do with our overt survival, especially when someone's got a switchblade over your head, don't actually get solved with our survival reaction. They get solved with an intelligence that's tapped into the whole. And this is a collective crisis right now that is my passion for HeartMath, because HeartMath has created this system of tools that helps us upgrade our survival software to respond with greater intelligence for the whole. And that is the ability of the heart to know how to move in the face of a challenge without self-preservation as its only motivation. So thank you for sharing that, Bacheva.
Well, I just want to say, I think it's so interesting that when you opened up your heart, then everyone let their guards down. It's the chain reaction that happened. And I can imagine that they were surprised by their own response also.
Yes, that's so true. There was a kind of collective, it was like it was happening in slow motion. Like a collective surprise of not knowing what was going to happen next.
And then they all opened up their hearts and shared.
Yeah, it was very moving. But who knew that opening up... You see, I had a preconception always that opening up my heart meant giving everything I had to everyone. And in this situation, opening up my heart was actually just telling the truth. I don't have enough for everyone. Who knew that would be opening up your heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like we just lost someone from the call.
No, you just gained somebody.
Oh, Angela. Angela, welcome. What a delight to have you. Angela's joining us. What was that, honey?
I just finished teaching at a local high school, and I taught them freeze frame was one of the three things I taught them, and they loved it. So I'm just reporting that I've had a wonderful experience today with heart math.
Freeze frame is one of the heart math tools, and Angela is one of the providers who lives in Hawaii. And so now we are showering the Pacific with our love. Yeah, thank you, Angela. It's wonderful to have you on the call. And if you want to listen in to the previous part, we'll give you the call-in number at the end.
Okay.
Does anybody else want to share anything or ask any questions?
I wanted to ask you if you could restate what you said before about the fact that you felt that before you thought that you had to be able to give everything to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I want to hear you say it again.
Yeah, it's important, right? Especially,
yeah.
We have all women on the call right now. And as a woman, certainly for me, I was conditioned to believe that having an open heart meant giving everything all the time to everyone. And what that really meant was martyring myself. And the more I martyred myself and exhausted myself and tapped myself out of my own reserves, the less I had to give.
Right.
And the less I was capable of being in my heart, quote-unquote, which to me being in the heart means feeling aligned, good, clear, full of purpose and self-care. And it's when your cup is overflowing that then you naturally are a gift just by who you are. And so my preconception of what it meant to be in the heart, give, 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 generosity and all of that. In that particular circumstance, with the 40 meals and 150 children and teenagers and mothers, would have meant, well, it just would have meant it would have been impossible to be in the heart in that situation because I didn't have enough for everyone. So then what I thought was to be in the heart was really a vanity, I'm going to call it. It was more about me than about them. I'm insufficient. Oh, woe is me. That's my martyr, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have enough for everyone. No matter how hard I try, I'm not enough. I don't have enough. And so that wasn't the heart. But I thought it was the heart because it's kind of this conditioning about what the heart is, which is, oh, it's nice and it's generous. So I'd be nice all the time and go out of my way to be really nice and talk with my voice a little elevated from where its real pitch was with a slight apology at the end of every sentence because somehow that was the heart. I don't know if anybody else on the call can recognize these things.
Yeah, I am totally with you. I just really want to hear you say, in other words, when you say, I don't have enough for everyone, the I is in a state of being egotistical and mental.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're saying?
Definitely.
And then how did you, you know, so if you get to your heart and you tell people, you know, I don't have enough for you right now, What do you offer them? I mean, I didn't really understand that part.
You know what was being offered to them in that moment? And I might not even know. This might be something for all of us to sit with. right? I mean, your reflections about Shava, of what happened in that moment, were beautiful. It was such a gift to hear that back from you. It moved me to tears because you saw things in the moment without even being there that I myself hadn't recognized, but that were absolutely true about that moment.
Hmm.
What I hear in answer to your question in this moment that was being offered to them through me was simply authenticity. Just realness. And real care. I want to give to you. I don't have enough for everyone. Not self-pity about that. Not identification with it. Just, that's what's real. What do you think we should do? So I was also offering them respect. I was saying, you're a part of this process. You're a part of this decision-making process. Maybe your wisdom can solve this because mine can't.
Wow.
So I was offering them vulnerability as well.
Mm-hmm.
And those are all heart qualities. Just like the little deaf, dumb, and blind boy, or not blind, he wasn't blind, the deaf and dumb boy. It was like what was being offered to him was, I value you. I don't have anything to give you, but you're so beautiful anyway. You have it all in your heart. Why do you need anything from me?
Mm.
So I gave him confirmation of himself.
Wow.
Eva?
Yes.
This is Yvette. You said something earlier that goes along with what you're just saying, that when you open your heart and you're listening to your intuition, these are your words, and I started and wrote it down, you get into the awareness of what is needed in the situation. It sounds like
Yes. That's
what was needed more than the food.
Mm. Oh, you guys are so good. It's like a meet for me to get to spend this time with you. Thank you. That really sounds right on.
Yeah, that really spoke to me. And it could be something, like you said, something that could be a little bit confrontive if it's necessary, or kindness if it's necessary. But
and it's really the discernment of the heart that knows that. And there was no way for me when I was 18 years old to know how to navigate that. And then having these very practical tools so that when I'm in those type of situations, to be able to rely on a structure, a system, something very practical, but that's in me, where I don't have to pull out a book or, some sort of pendulum or crystal or something around my heart, but I could just get to the heart itself. When you can't rely on anything else, it's in you.
Another thing that was really profound for me is that the heart works outside of linear time. So you're going to come up with something that you would never think of.
Yes, for sure.
So I think that's what happened in that situation. You know, it was outside of linear time. It was the possibility of what you could do in that situation.
Yes, definitely something that was not preconceived. It brings such a spontaneous response to life.
Exactly, yeah.
Did that answer your question for that person that had asked about?
Yeah, it's beginning to answer it.
Well, and I think that's really the key. I think that's really the key about this whole call is it's a heart start, right?
Right.
This is a beginning. And it's an oasis of positivity, as we've been enjoying calling it, to start off the week, but it's also just putting your toe in the water of the possibilities of the heart. And so if you have unanswered questions from tonight's call, you can always email them, as Annette did, and in a moment I'm going to answer her question. And you can email any unanswered questions to ask@Sierra, which is not Sierra with an S, like the Sierra Club. It's Fiera with an F, like fun or frank.
Mm-hmm.
Fiera, FYERA.com. So that's ask@fiera.com. Mm-hmm. And so this is a start. It's a beginning to be able to maneuver challenging situations like the ones I've described. The heart took me 13 years of practice learning very specific tools to be able to do that. And so be gentle with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Be inspired by the possibility, but don't hold this as a measuring stick to your own process. If you're interested in learning these specific tools for accessing that open heart, spontaneous intelligence in those situations, the format for that is there's a teleclass, a beginner's teleclass. So here we are. It's a beginning, right? You begin and you just take steps. The beginner's teleclass starting on Tuesday, March 20th. And so, again, if that's of interest to you, you can either send an inquiry about that to ask@fiera.com or register@fiera.com. And there's also a place on fiera.com in the lower right-hand corner of the homepage where you could sign up to receive both announcements about these free calls and what the topics are going to be each time, and the call-in numbers, and the call-in numbers to catch up on calls you may have missed that you want to hear, and to sign up for our free newsletter as well. So it's a start.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Oh, my goodness. It's such a pleasure. It's such a pleasure. And before we close tonight, I do want to respond to a question from Annette from last week, which I think relates to this beginning and this start. And Annette's question, I'm going to paraphrase it here, Annette, so you tell me if I got you or if you want to refine it, okay?
Okay.
Was we talked last week about sometimes when you learn new tools, then just magically the universe seems to give you an opportunity to have to use them. And we talked last week about my training of the circus and how the next day they had all kinds of problems, quote unquote, to deal with. Well, I think already this call has given a reframe on the idea of problems, hasn't it, Annette?
Oh, yeah. It has clarified a lot.
Good. I'm really glad. And then also just to say, you know, your question was almost specifically as well, did I think some of those crises that came to you after you did your heart math training, mm-hmm. did the crises come to you because you did the heart math training?
Huh.
And truth of the matter is that that's a question that simply can't be answered. My crystal ball has been in the shop and nobody knows how to fix it since I was born. You know, so we don't know, and ultimately it doesn't really matter. Because what matters is those events came to you in life and you had some resources to deal with them in a more innovative and productive way for yourself, yes?
That did happen, yeah. I was able to heal a very severe fracture in 4 weeks. I had a perfect bone. And I used the tools in the surgery with the doctors, with everything that was going on. And it made it much easier for me. But my question was this going to happen anyway? Of course, you don't have a crystal ball. But Suzanne said something that was interesting. She said that that the tools or the HeartMath program accelerates everything. And if you resist that acceleration, then things may happen. So what's your response to that?
My response to that is that it sounds like the question itself is coming from fear of things happening.
Oh.
And so fear that is pilot light, low-grade fear is our collective dis-ease right now.
Uh-huh.
Because fear is an emotion that was designed as part of our survival software.
Mm-hmm.
Is there an immediate threat where you are sitting right now?
No, it's extremely comfortable and cozy.
Yes, okay. Then your fear in this moment is a waste of your adrenaline, cortisol, and vital reserves.
True. Mm-hmm.
And it shuts down your brain, and that's the bottom line. And so what we're doing with HeartMath tools is we're healing the moment by the moment by the moment.
Oh.
And that there's no need to be in fear right now. It's a waste of your energy.
What did you say again? We're healing by the moment? I didn't hear you.
Mm-hmm. We're healing each moment.
Oh, we're healing each moment. Okay.
So this moment, the healing is healing living in fear and paranoia. That something might happen. If something happens, then you have tools to respond to it. But right now what's happening is you're living in fear and paranoia that something's going to happen. And that is more the problem than any problem that's going to come your way.
Oh, that would create the problem.
Well, now again, your fear is trying to figure out how you could prevent any problem from happening by always being in the right consciousness so you never attract any problem, and that's fear.
Sounds like my MO.
So you already know some heart math. Just work with neutral for that.
Yeah.
Just bring yourself to neutral. I, unfortunately, in some ways, although it's fortunate in others because I love the people I'm about to talk to, have to go into a meeting in the next couple of minutes. And so if you have any questions that haven't been answered in tonight's call, please send them to ask@fiera.com. Or if you're interested either in the beginner teleclass or the beginner workshop or the Heart Mastery Program, you can also send inquiries about that to the same address. And please sign up for our mailing list, too, if you haven't done that, because it's a great way to just keep learning more and keep putting a toe in the water to see what this is all about. And it's been just so rich for me to spend this time with you guys on the phone. I really appreciate the heart vision that you brought to the stories that I shared. It deepened my own experience of them in the most wonderful way. So maybe we can just close the call tonight by, again, giving our attention, paying our attention to self. And as we started in gratitude, connecting with something or someone that you appreciate. Could be something that you heard tonight on the call that touched you in a particular way. And just appreciating that and letting the benefits and the power of your appreciation extend out perhaps to the problem that you were looking at originally, to a place in the world or a person that you care about that you'd want to share the power of this appreciation and heart intelligence with, and just to let your appreciation radiate to them. Definitely know that mine is going out to you. Thank you all so much. It was wonderful to talk
thank
to you tonight.
Thank you, Shava, so much.
Shava,
have a great night, everyone.
Have a great
good
night.
Thank you.
Shava.
See you soon, I hope.
Yes. Good night.
Good night. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.